Well, Pat Royce, in only the way Sid Hartman can do, there's nobody that would have shocked the world if you die at 100 years old, right? That was still shocking news when we heard it, right?
That was my immediate tweet on that, was when I heard it, that I said, you know, I almost drove off the road. I heard it while I was in the car. And who else could be 100 years, 7 months, and cause us to be alarmed? And it's funny. I've talked to a lot of people who are saying they are sadder than they thought they'd be, you know, after dealing with him all those years with his, what would we say, Mike, abrupt ways. You didn't know you were going to miss him immediately or, maybe even long-term, but, it was, you know, I think we all, in time, and when we get in this media business, come to appreciate characters, and there will never be another one like this guy.
Nothing. I mean, we'll tell Sid stories forever, another 100 years. People that won't be around 100 years from now will still be telling Sid stories, no doubt. I did see one of your colleagues tweet out, I thought it was an interesting little nugget. In his very first column, he referenced somebody, I forget who it was. That person was born in 1897, and at the time was only like 48 years old when he wrote his first column. And then within the last week, he had some blurb about a high schooler who was born in like 2002. So he's written about people born in three different centuries.
Well, the one I always use is he was selling newspapers and then sneaking into the stadium when Bronco Nagurski played in 1929.
Right.
And I believe it was Rodney Smith who broke a record of Broncos in 2017, and Sid was at the game. Rodney Smith did something. I mean, he saw Bronco when the Gophers would hand Bronco the ball 20 times and go down the field, and he also covered Rodney Smith breaking some Bronco record. It was pretty astounding.
Yeah, no question about it. You've written several pieces this week, an excellent obituary, and then a column where I thought you hit the nail on the head. It was beautifully written, where everyone's saying, you know, rest in peace, Sid, and your answer is no way Sid Hartman's going to rest in peace. No one really worked like him, right? No one really went about his business the way Sid did.
And, you know, Sid not only wanted to control his message, he wanted to control the message from the entire Twin Cities media. That's hard work, man. That's hard work when you're fighting every perceived slight against the home teams that you discover. And, Mike, like I do, when people talk about Sid, you know, his hearing was gone for like 20 years. He wasn't worth a damn. But his eyes were still unbelievable. He had the ability. I've said he had the peripheral vision of an athlete. He knew everything going on in every corner of the press box. And if he saw three people walking over there, kind of talking low, he'd go over and interrupt it to see what the topic was. Same thing in a clubhouse or a locker room. You've seen him in action, man. He was an observant son of a gun. I'll tell
you
that.
And covered ground. I mean, even at 90, he was. He could cover some ground, up steps, down steps. My first year here as a full-time guy was 2006, and I was stunned that Sid was going up and down the Metrodome steps from the press box down to the locker room. I'm like, I guess he was probably 85 or 86 at that point. I'm not in great shape, but it tired me out, and here's Sid's going up and down those steps. It was incredible.
I really believe if people don't think walking is good enough exercise to help you out, just follow Sid around. He was a great walker until he got to be 90. I that his daughter Chris told the story and for the book, and then I use it in the obit that when her kids were smaller, Sid would park the car, and then she'd have to kind of get in the back and get the kids out of the car and get them ready. And she'd look up, and Sid would be two blocks down the street. She'd be yelling, "Sid, come back, Sid!"
And I
believe it. I mean, he was the fastest walker I ever saw, because he was always in a hurry to get someplace, even if he had no place to go, he was in a hurry to get there, and he rarely did he have no place to go.
Yeah, and that was a thing, is that he would, now in later years he had a driver who, with a whole nother story we could do, one day the driver fell asleep during the Jerry Kill news conference, which is a whole nother fun story to talk about. he drove really until he was probably 90, 92, and he would do things like, I'd be on campus doing something in the middle of the summer, nothing's going on, and I don't remember even why I'm there, and I look, and here's Sid coming down the hallway. I'm like, what's he doing here? Just making his rounds. And that's what he'd do. He'd get in his car and he'd drive and he'd stop at the Vikings at Eden Prairie. He'd drive to campus. He'd figure out how he could get something from the Wolves. And every single day he would drive around town trying to get a nugget that nobody else could get.
And park anywhere he wanted to. One of my favorite stories is that my stepson Ryan was working for the 3M. The senior 3M, and Sid was coming out there on a Sunday to do his morning radio show and looking to see where to park. And Cadillac was one of their sponsors, and they had like three Cadillacs up on the side of a hill there. and Sid goes down this walking path, you know, people diving out of the way. He goes down this walking path and drives like halfway up the side of the hill and puts his Cadillac there, throws the keys to somebody, and somebody came to my stepson and said, hey, Sid's car's up on a hill up here. He had to go move the car. I mean, it was, the rules did not apply to the great man, that's for sure.
That's for sure, no question about it. And you mentioned he set the tone, because he would try to set the tone. He would keep an eye on everything. And if nothing else, no one probably like him ever has shaped the tone. I think you even said that some of what you write was oftentimes in response to what Sid would write. And I don't know if anyone ever shaped the tone or the attitudes of an entire media market the way he would, whether it was positive or negative, on all sides of the issue.
Well, yeah, and he was the voice of the teams, pretty much so. I mean, now, if there became a big story, he would, you know, the reporters would get help from him, and, you know, he had contacts that were unbelievable. But in my younger, more impulsive days, I actually did have those. I would respond to his glowing praise just to drive me nuts. I mean, like every time Bobby Knight came to town, I would write a column about this great Indiana basketball program and not mention Bobby. I would, you know, just for, he didn't care, but Sid did. Sid did scream at me. So that's kind of what you were looking for back then. But I go back to being a copy boy for him in 1963, and he was something back then. Six columns a week and sports editor and doing his radio, and it was just amazing how much work he did.
Yeah, no question about it. And now it's stories, and as you mentioned, people are saddened, no question. But there's a celebration in it all, in the sense that we have more reason to share stories. And you probably could do an hour show every day for 5 or 6 years with Sid stories, right?
Yeah, because they just keep popping into your head. You know, I've been on the radio, you know, with various outlets and doing my own stuff and other things. I've said numerous times here, but I just now did the, when we talked about Sid's driving, did the parking his Cadillac on the side of the hill story occur to me. You know, it's not one that I've even used yet this week. So, it's amazing. And, sports writers don't become first name celebrities in an entire state. And, the state fair appearances he made for WCCO, man, he didn't care who was out there. He just wanted to know how many it was, you know, so then he could go over and tell everyone else who appeared at the fair how much larger his crowd was than everybody else. And it was. And we never told him, well, yeah, they're coming to see the chimpanzee at the fair, at the circus, you know, Sid. But it was amazing how how insecure he remained, and that kind of drove him. I mean, he always needed to reinforce his status, even when there was no greater status to attain than he had. Yeah. He already had a status, an unprecedented status, but he was always insecure about what that status was. A team of psychologists would have a very difficult time figuring out what drove that man.
Yeah, and that kept that competitive nature going, no question. You wrote a story with his son Chad, who's a local radio host, and at one point was the Timberwolves announcer, and fairly well known himself, obviously. But talking about Bud Grant and Mike Grant at an Eden Prairie game, and Sid's own grandson was playing on the other team, Wyzetta, and he went and sat on the other side with the Grants, which is a pretty good story.
He sat with Bud because Mike is, you know, he was basically a member of the Grant family when all those kids were growing up, Sid. But yeah, he sits, Bud's over there. Hunter Hartman's playing for Wyzetta. Sid goes over and sits with Bud on the Eden Prairie side. Are you surprised? I'm not.
No, and then
I'm not.
I think you said, Chad said that, I've known him for almost my whole life. It's like, yeah, your grandson is on the other side, which is pretty funny, funny story. And again, we could go on and on. But now, how long have you been now? Obviously, you've been in the Twin Cities writing forever. But in terms of at the Star Tribune, you may have had to wait the longest to get senior writer status of anyone in the history of a major metropolitan newspaper.
Well, yeah, I've been in the Twin Cities for 52 years, and I actually worked Duluth and St. Cloud before that. I just turned 75 this month, and I feared this day because I'd have to become the sage, you know. I'd have to become like the, you know, when is that old SOP going to retire guy, right? I've become that guy. So, it's been the response to everything done on Sid and the outpouring from people, and he would be really proud of it. I'll tell you that, because it was very important. It was very important to him to be recognized, and I think even he might be surprised at how huge the recognition has been.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting mentioned on national NFL broadcast. I saw the other night, I guess, as well. So yeah, no question, he would like what he's seen. There's no doubt about that.
Oh yes, that's right. It was the most insecure egomania I've ever seen in a person. You know, this usually guys who need it as bad as Sid are fully confident, you know, but egomaniacs generally are offensive, but with him it was humorous, you know, it was always, how did you ever see? I don't know if this crowd at the fair is as big as it was last year. Max, is it as big as last year? You think it's as big as last year? You know, he was always worried. Chad said in that column I wrote that, you know, Chad was teasing him about getting a free bowl of ice cream, and he was afraid that he was going to get fired at the Star Tribune because it became public he had some free ice cream. And that's not a joke with him. I mean, he always had that paranoia. It was incredible.
I mean, even in a small degree, when I first got to town, I was doing when I was in St. Louis, I did a NASCAR show, so I had some good connections with NASCAR, and so Dark Star would have me on Fridays, and Steve Thompson would have me on Sundays, and we talked an hour each night on NASCAR, and so I would get, I mean, I wasn't getting Earnhardt or Jeff Gordon, but we were getting some pretty good guests. And he tracked me down at a game or a press conference, and he doesn't care about NASCAR, but he's like, you think you can get me one of those guys for the sports huddle? And so we got him, Matt Kenseth, and he did an interview. That's a whole other story. But even to that point, like he, somebody else got something, and by golly, he wanted now to to get that. And that's a low rung story on just but it is kind of a microcosm of what drove him. If NASCAR was big and somebody got an interview, now I want that on my show on the Sports Huddle. You know, that was him.
Well, we all talk about how he broke his hip. And 2 weeks later, a little over 2 weeks later, he shows up at PJ Fleck's press conference. hurts, right? He's out and about. I mean, 96-year-old man breaks his hip. Everybody thought he was there to see what PJ had to say. No, he wasn't. He was there to browbeat PJ into being the weekly free guest on his Sunday radio show, just like the coaches before him had. And what better chance to guilt a new coach into promising to be on his Sunday radio show than to say, hey, I just had a broken hip 2 weeks ago and I'm here and you got to be on my radio show, which is, and there are reports of people overhearing the conversation as Sid guilted him and shamed him into promising to not to be on his show every Sunday for free for a half hour.
Yeah, yeah, it is amazing. It is amazing, no doubt about it. Well, we'll let you go. We appreciate your time and sharing some of your memories of Sid Hartman, 100 years old. He made it to 100, almost 101, and the stories will go on forever.
All right, Mike.
All right. Yep, thanks, Pat. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.